Hello everyone, welcome to Tea Time History Chat Live. I hope you are all well. Today we are going to talk about Roman London. If you're interested in Roman history and you're heading to the capital, then there are a few places that I think are quite cool to go to and you might find of interest. So anyway, we're going to do that today. So welcome. It is Tea Time History Chat Live. I am Philippa Lacey Brawl. This is the British History Channel. And if you're joining me live, welcome. Thank you. I'm streaming live, hopefully, should be, anyway, on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Also welcome if you're in the catch-up crew. I've also got crumbs on my chest. If you're in the catch-up crew and you are listening on the podcast, perhaps, which is also available, which is British History. If you're searching for that and you just search British History, then you probably will come up with a plethora of ones. So you might want to add my name to your search. So if you search for British History with Philippa, that might be enough. And I'm on Spotify, Apple, and all sorts of other ones. So thank you so much to people who were with me only a short while ago. I have just finished this week's History After Dark live with the girls at a completely different time. We went live at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. this week we were talking about William Marshall, and that's because I'm off out later. I should get the fluff off my top before I go. But I'm off out. So instead of not having History After Dark this week, we decided to do it at a completely different time. It was bizarre, but interesting and fun. So if you want to know about William Marshall, Earl of Pembroke, and why we love him, I especially love him, then you can watch History After Dark on the catch up on its own YouTube channel. So, but this week we're talking Roman London. So if you're interested in traveling, if you're interested in Roman history, if you like going to London and you want to see something different, then this episode should be a really good one for you. Please feel free to comment and I should be able to pick it up. Instagram, slightly not. Maybe if you're on Instagram, you could join me over on YouTube, or consider joining me on YouTube, because otherwise I have to switch over and I don't always see, but I can see Maria has joined over on YouTube. And I can see Lizzie, Amanda, Beverly, Marianne, Makeup and Monarchies. Nice. Jenna, hiya. Deborah, and Gory Gremlin 13. Hello. Welcome. Let's get into Roman London. So, but before I do that, thank you very much to those of you who are a member of my Patreon and have submitted some questions for Nathan Armin. I am interviewing Nathan next Wednesday, and that interview will be available soon after that. I haven't decided whether I'm going to do that one straight away or whether the Churchill War Rooms is going to come next, but either way, thank you very much to those who have submitted questions for Nathan. Nathan, you may have seen him on the TV very recently. He has been in the documentary about the Princes in the Tower. I think he's been dubbed as the only dissenting voice in that documentary. He is Henry VII biographer. His new book on Henry VII is coming out in July. He's also written about the House of Beaufort, and he's also written about York pubs, which I'm also quite interested in. He's from Wales, and he's written about Tudor Wales, and also the book that gets him, I think, originally got him into these discussions about the Princes in the Tower is his book. His other book is about the Pretenders, so Simnel, Purbeck, and why can I never remember all three? You helped me out last week as well. Warwick. That's his book. So I'm interviewing Nathan next week. So if you want your chance to see the extended version of that interview with Nathan, I also make sure it's ad-free, then please join me on patreon.com/British History. I have other interviews coming up, which I will be asking again patrons for their own questions to put to the historians. I'm going to be interviewing Estelle Perronc about her new book, which is all about Anne Boleyn and her time in France. I'm also going to be interviewing Sharon Bennett Connolly about the Anarchy, which is a incredibly interesting period of history, which I think a little bit like the Republic era, if I dare say so, in the similar sort of length and incredibly disruptive to just normal life as it goes on. So anyway, so I'll be speaking to Sharon as well. In these are all coming up in the next few weeks. So if you want your chance to put your question to any of those, and I've got others coming up as well. I'm also interviewing Gareth Streeter about Arthur Tudor. So anyway, if you're interested in asking any of your own questions for those people, then please do pop along to patreon.com/British History, become a Patreon, and there you go. And that's not the only thing. This Sunday, behind me here, you've got The Palace by Gareth Russell. That is our book for book club happening this Sunday. And thank you very much to Becky for pointing out to me that I think in the US, your clocks have already changed for spring. I don't know if anywhere else in the world has. And so the timings, both for my live shows and for book club, might be slightly off. Well, we'll be maybe another hour off what you expect for the next few weeks until our clocks change here in the UK at the end of March. So yeah, this Sunday book club, it's 7 o'clock UK time, whatever that happens to be. This coming weekend, Eva, thank you. So whatever time, so book club is on Sunday. So, right. So, okay. So that's why Becky told me. So the US, their clocks will change the night beforehand. Anyway, 7 o'clock UK time, the Palace by Gareth Russell. And the book that's next to it on my shelf behind me, if you're listening on the podcast, it is, in fact, actually, you can't see the title. I've just realised it's Nicola Tallis's book, Uncrowned Queen, The Fateful Life of Margaret Beaufort. That is the next book in book club. So if you want to, maybe it's too late, you're perfectly welcome to join us on Sunday. Anyway, even if you're not already a member, but if you want to join and maybe get ready for the next book club, that is our next book. And that book club will happen in May. Right. So I always have people going, she took 10 minutes before she started talking about what she's going to talk about. Okay. So Roman London. There are places you've probably seen. So let's go over some of them. Now London was termed Londinium during the Roman occupation, and Britain was occupied by Rome from around about 43 AD, as in that's when it started, and they obviously colonized and took hold of places. And then the Romans were occupied Britain until they started to withdraw at the end of the 4th century and had completely withdrawn very early into the 5th century. The Roman town planners are just, I think, my heroes. As a Virgo, I think they must all have been Virgos. You know what you're going to get if you're looking at a Roman city or town or barracks. They have the same elements. And so you know that if there was a London city, Londinium. Now, Londinium was big, so that shows how significant it was and Britain was as a part of the Roman Empire. But what you can expect in a Roman settlement, a city wall, fortified gates, a basilica, a forum, where you have your civic buildings located, so you know the governance, an amphitheater for public gatherings and entertainments and public shows of justice, so executions, things like that, temples, usually a barracks, and there will be sited somewhere near a river, usually fordable, or they build a bridge. And with hills so that they can put their buildings where they're not going to get flooded. So you know that Londinium has to have had most, if not all, of these things. And you can see various parts of the wall which used to encase the city. So it's called, well, you can still see there's a road called City Walls. And this sort of encased the square mile ish of the Roman city. One of the most famous places you can see part of the Roman wall is just at the entrance of the Tower Hill underground station, which is I haven't got a picture of that today because I can only put up so many pictures, apparently, a bit rude. So I'm going to show you somewhere you probably haven't seen, but that isn't far away from the Tower of London. So loads of people get to see it. But there's this, I wanted to show you this part of the wall. This is just off Gresham Street, which is much further back. It's actually further north than St. Paul's. So you're getting further away from the river. And this, as with many of the Roman ruins, actually was exposed during the bombing in World War II. And the reason I wanted to show you this is part of the barracks, which were sited in Londinium, and they were built around 100. This particular part was built in 120 AD. It replaced an earlier wooden structure, which was burnt down in the Boudica Rebellion, which hit London, and it was basically hidden. And I want to show you the evidence of partly why it was hidden. It's because people would utilize the space. They would utilize the fact that you've got this incredible wall there and build up to it. And you've still got some evidence of that here with what looks like more modern brickwork and a fireplace in there at a sort of first floor level height, or I think Americans, you'd call that second floor. We have ground and first, and I think you have first and second. But either way, a fireplace at above head height. So you can tell there's floors here. And the fact that these are built, this was built up to, is part of the reason it becomes obscured by time. So that you can get to if you're walking along Gresham Street, and if you have a look, you can find that. One place you won't be able to see from, well, there's a couple of places actually I'm about to tell you about where you couldn't see them from street level. One of them is the amphitheater. I probably should have done this later, but I'll do this one now. And the amphitheater is, so here in this picture, so if you're watching on the, if you're listening back to the podcast, I will try and explain it. You've got the Guildhall, incredible amount of history here. It's where Mary the First made a speech. That's often thought to be Elizabeth's, actually, where she talks about being married to her people. And you've got Guildhall, and then to the to the left of the Guildhall, to the right of this picture, you have the Guildhall Art Gallery. Underneath here, in this area, is the site of the amphitheatre of Londinium. And in the paving slabs in the courtyard in between, which sort of flanked on one side, on two sides, one by the art gallery and then Guildhall, you have in the pavement these black slabs. And these black slabs, excuse me, that indicates the outline of the amphitheatre. So actually at street level, there is something you can see of Roman London, but only if you know what you're looking for. And I'm going to come back to talk about the amphitheatre a little bit later. But the amphitheatre, typical, again, this is a planner's dream. The amphitheatre is always used for the same sort of thing. So gladiator fights, animal fighting, things that we would find incredibly unsavory now, and other public events. The one in Londinium is built around 70 AD, upgraded in the second century to take 6,000 spectators. So actually that's not a huge amount, but it's a decent sized football stadium, soccer stadium. I don't know what your equivalent would be. Now, popularity of these kind of things, these gladiator games and obviously public executions, everything, just it waned with the rising popularity of Christianity in the Roman Empire. To access the amphitheatre, you would go through Guildhall Art Gallery. You have to go through security and you go down, as far as I remember, two or three levels. I haven't got any pictures of it because it's very dark when you get down there. It's dark to take pictures. It's incredibly atmospheric. They've done it beautifully. And what they've done is they have, from the remains that are there, they have made sure that you can, there's a space, basically you can go and walk around them. You've got a gatehouse, the remains of the gatehouse. There's one of those near the Tower of London, actually. If you go into the underpass, under the road, you can see one of these gatehouses. But anyway, the gatehouse, the actual amphitheatre is there. As an ex-sewerage technician, I find it incredibly interesting that you can see one of the water causeways there. And they have it lit with sort of figures doing games and things. So it's actually very quiet. So if you are in this part of London, so you're in the City of London, obviously this is all in the city, you wouldn't know it, but you can go into the Guildhall Art Gallery. Like I say, go through security. It's free, or at least it was when I was last there. You go down a few levels, and you can actually stand in the space where the amphitheatre used to stand, and actually next to the remains. That was one of the first places I found of Roman London. The first one actually that got me really, really excited. Now, more recently, actually, I've been to this place twice. I'm going to show you this. Is the temple to Mithras. It's actually it's free to get in again, and it is underneath the Bloomberg. I think the whole building might be Bloomberg, but certainly this site is operated by them. It's 7 meters underground, so probably similar to the amphitheater. Actually, I know the topography is slightly different in the different parts, like because of the hills. Because they chose hills. The amphitheater is built later. Sorry, excuse me. The temple to Mithras is built in around 240 AD on the banks of the Walbrook River, which you can't tell is there now because it's all built over. And another site that was discovered when the area was bombed during World War II. And the remains were uncovered. But they were moved. They were moved in order to be on public display. And then actually they were moved back to they're now back into their original location. Now they identified them as Roman when they excavated, but were not at all sure what this building was used for. I'll show you another picture. So you can see the remains. Now these walls that you can see, are created by light. So you've got strip lights above and they create a wall. So when you first go in, there's no lights like this. And it's so you can see the remains quite easily, but you can't really, it's wonderful the way they've done this because it makes you able to actually imagine what the whole place looks like. It's fairly small. I suppose it's similar size to a small parish local church, and they really didn't know what these remains were, what the purpose of this building was, until toward the end of the excavation, and they discovered the head of Mithras, who's a Roman god. He had a male sort of, it was a male cult following, and temples to Mithras are seen across the Roman Empire. They call them Mithraeum. Said that right, but basically temples to Mithras. And there's not much known about how this cult worshipped. What they actually did in this building, how they worshipped isn't well known. And actually I was in Rome a few years ago, 2019, and went to the baths of Caracalla, is that how you say it? So if you're in Rome and you've done the Colosseum and you've done the Forum, head out a little bit and you can go to the baths of Caracalla. And it's a massive bath complex, and on the site and the edge of the baths was actually a temple to Mithras. So they hadn't known what this building was for until they came across just the head of what would have been a complete statue of Mithras. Now they've recreated this at the very end. I have got another photograph actually of a little bit closer up. They've recreated this, they call it a tauroctony. I hope I've said that right as well. It's an image of Mithras slaying a bull. And they've put this at the high end of the temple. And this is an image seen in Mithraeum across across the where the Roman Empire had spread. He was an oriental deity. There were elements of the sun and the moon actually in his worship. So it's quite intriguing because you've got something you think, well, yes, it's a man slaying a bull. That must be what it's all about. But actually how they worshipped isn't well known. So I don't know if anyone comes across anything, I'd be really interested to find out. So there's three locations already. Now, my fourth location is it's not actually known whether it's exactly Roman, but you might have heard of it. It's the London Stone. And the reason I'm putting this picture up, unless you already know where it is or you're very keen-eyed, you might not know what I am talking about or why I've put this picture up. But if you have a look on the there's a pedestrian crossing here, and to the left, you can see a stone sort of monument with a glass window in it. In there is the London Stone, and I shall show you that closer up. It's hard. You can see my reflection in the window. It's very hard to take a picture of. It is just a stone. It's a stone. And it's probably the remnants of a bigger monument. Thought that it could be Roman, not actually quite sure. But it was first recorded around the year 1100. It does appear on the copper plate maps, which you might have seen of London, which were made in the 1550s. So in Elizabeth I's reign, London Stone is on those maps. It has been moved. And like I say, it's probably smaller than it ever was, or than it was originally. It once stood in the middle of Cannon Street. But it's been moved. And then it was actually put into this there was a church here. If I go back to that other picture, there was a church to St. Swithin, dedicated to St. Swithin on this site. But that was again bombed in the Second World War. It was demolished, and the building that's been put up has been put up around that encasing that was already there. So you can easily miss the London Stone. Now, the bit I've been really excited to get to about, I'll come back to it. But if you're heading to the Tavern, so I've already said there's part of the wall, the Roman wall, that you can see on the near the entrance to the Tower Hill underground. If you then take the subway, so the under, I don't know what anyone, what do you not call it? What does everyone else call it? So it goes under the road. The walkway goes under the road, and there's another piece of Roman history there. I think it's a tower, so probably a gate, lookout tower, something like that. Then next to at the top of the hill, next to Tower of London, is All Hallows by the Tower. It's a church with an incredible amount of history. This is where people who were executed would be taken before they're taken to their final resting place, if they were executed on the Tower Hill scaffold site, which is basically next door to it. But if you go into that church, you're not only sort of following that history. Again, it was bombed, but anyway, and Samuel Pepys went there to have a look at he went up the tower to have a look at the city burning during the Great Fire. But if you go down into the crypt, then you can see part of a Roman pavement. It's incredible, actually, how much London itself has built up. I would love to speak to someone about actually how that happens. Like, is it just pure debris? Okay, everything is like 5 to 7 meters underground now. And so in the crypt of All Hallows by the Tower, there's this Roman pavement. But the real delight down there is this. It is a model of Londinium. It was built between 1928 and 1933 by a man called Anthony Lowther. And when the church opened their crypt to the public in the 1930s, it was put on display, and it was actually gifted by a Miss, I don't know her first name, Miss M. Newman Tremaine. And so presumably she commissioned it, or maybe she bought it off Mr. Lowther, but she wanted it displayed, and it was actually to commemorate the death, or in remembrance of the death of her two brothers who she lost in World War II. Mr. Lowther was building this model, he built it obviously to the knowledge that that was already that he had at the time, and he had to make a couple of changes. So he updated it to include the Temple of Mithras. He updated it to include the barracks. So I've shown you both of those already. He included it, he included those. But of course, it's not completely accurate, because this is based on what he was able to, what he knew about in, well, by 1933. So, can you point out what is missing? There's something really obvious that's missing here. Yeah, Melissa says she has the same question about how archaeology winds up so very far underground. Yeah, like has the Earth just like got bigger, literally expanded? Has it got fat? But what can you see? What can you not see on this model? I'd be very interested to know if you found it. The I haven't looked it up, but I'm presuming that is London Bridge. That's the bridge. And on the south side of the river is Southwark. And Southwark, the name, it's actually, if you see it spelt, it's South, as you'd expect, W-A-R-K. And I'm saying this off the top of my head now, but I think that comes from South Works. So the Romans to build the bridge, and also, I don't know, do whatever they needed to do on the south side of the river, South Works. So they would have had something there. Some of my tea. But of course, what is missing here is the amphitheatre that I spoke about that sits underneath Guildhall Art Gallery. And that is because that wasn't discovered until 1988, when the new building was going to be built and the archaeologists were digging. And that is why it is incorporated into basically the basement of the art gallery. So unfortunately, Mr. Lowther didn't have a hope of being able to put the amphitheatre in. But I just think that's absolutely delightful. So if you go to All Hallows by the Tower, go down into the crypt, you'll see a Roman pavement and you'll see this delightful model, which now is almost 100 years old in its own right. So it's a little bit of history itself, which I find really cute. The Museum of London was full of Roman artifacts. I haven't been to the new one yet, so I can't tell you whether it is or not. But there you are. So there's quite a bit of Roman London to still see. The Tower of London, where it's sited, is sited there particularly because it was using the Roman defences that were already there. They were very good. They knew what they were doing, choosing a site. So you can still see parts there. And then, of course, when you go out of London, I could do a lot more about what to see outside of London. But if you're in London and you like Roman history, then those places, especially because they're less well known, you'll be able to go and have some quiet time in the amphitheatre. The Temple of Mithras is most certainly worth a look. The way they light it up is really quite spectacular. I'll just show you that again. So these lights are not there all the time. You go in and it's sort of part of a light show, which it really does give you a feel. They put some music through, and obviously it's conjecture because I don't know what went on in these temples. But yes, you can get an idea of the size of it, and you're literally in that space. So it's very, very exciting. So you can go and see all these places, have a little bit of quiet time. It's a little bit off the beaten track in London. I am probably going to be looking into doing a Roman tour, but we're going to come out of London because there are some incredible places outside of London that I want to take people to as well. London's lovely. It's lovely for history, but I'm going to get people out of London because there's so much good stuff out. So before I go, I just wanted to remind you. Oh, I don't know if I can do this. Let me see. Just wanted to remind you of, no, I can't, but the Stuarts Festival is on in 2 weekends' time, 22nd till the 24th of March. And we have six speakers, including myself. I'm doing a talk on the gunpowder plot. And I'm actually focusing on, I know that if you were with me last week, I titled it something about mass murder. And then I decided to come away from that. What I am going to use the talk to do is explain how they got to the point where the conspirators thought what the only thing they could do, the only thing left to do was blow up Parliament, and what that would actually have meant, because it wasn't just a matter of killing the people, killing the king and the heir to the throne and the House of Lords. It would have completely ripped out governance in the country, and I want to go into that in my talk. Gareth Russell's talk on Anna of Denmark, the Queen of James I, is fascinating. She is an incredibly complex and interesting figure. And Gareth goes into her life in very interesting detail. Alice Hunt is talking about Oliver Cromwell and the English Republic. And this was a topic we were asked to put into our next Stuarts Online History Festival. I'm very, very pleased to have done so. The Republic is one of those periods, I've spoken about this before, that it's almost, because the monarchy comes back, it's almost like, oh, there was a blip. There was a blip, and then we got the kings back, and then we had fun again. Professor Alice Hunt is talking about the Republic. Andrea Zuvich is talking about royal mistresses. She's calling it the tenuous power of beauty at the Stuart court. And there was a few mistresses and otherwise as well. Julian Humphreys is talking about the escape of Charles II after the Battle of Worcester. A hunted king took Charles II 6 weeks to escape after the Battle of Worcester. That was the final battle of the English Civil Wars. And it was by no means a given that he was going to escape with his life. He was definitely a hunted man. And Katie Wignall is going to take us around London looking at the Great Fire of London of 1666. If you want tickets to that, and why not? They are £21.50, so kept it as affordable as possible. You get all six talks. We have a live Q&A with all of the speakers on the Sunday evening, the 24th of March. And also a fun quiz as well to follow and to close off the event. And if you can't make any of the talks or you can't make all of them, it doesn't matter. You have full access to them, including recordings of the live events until the end of May. Tickets are on sale until 5 o'clock UK time on the 24th of March. So on the Sunday. So that's just before the live stream, basically. If you miss the end of the ticket sales, if you're watching this back after the end of March, you can get all of the talks as you can for previous online history festivals. You can buy them in a bundle at buymeacoffee.com/Philippa. So that's my name, P-H-I-L-I-P-P-A. You can go there and you can actually buy the talk bundles, including the first Stuarts Online History Festival. We've done a Georgians, we've done a Tudors. So you can get hold of all of those there. It is a short one today because I'm off out to watch Wicked. Don't know if any of you have seen that, but I'm off to go and see Wicked. If you missed History After Dark, we do apologize. That is my fault. We did it at 1 o'clock today. You can watch that on the playback. That is on William Marshall, Earl of Pembroke, The Greatest Knight, one of my favorites. We did that on him today. We're back with History After Dark next week on Florence Nightingale. And I'll be back here with Tea Time History Chat Live same time next week. So 3 o'clock next week. Look out for the clocks changing in between times. And it will be a little bit, because it will be another hour out somehow. So somehow, I know how. It's just such a silly thing for us to keep doing. That was brought in in the war, by the way. You probably already know that. Brought in for an actual specific reason, and it just stayed. Need to be careful of these things. Everyone, have a great day. I will see you very soon. Take care, and have a good one. All right, bye-bye.